Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to Money for the Rest of Us, a personal finance show on money, how it works, how to invest it, and how to live without worrying about it. I'm your host, David Stein, and today is episode 46. It's titled, Discover Your Investment Style. I get a lot of emails from individuals that want to know, how do I start investing? How do I begin investing? And what's interesting is it's not so much what are the steps. Often they're young and they're seeking permission to invest. In other words, am I allowed to invest now at this stage of my life? And I want to talk about how to begin investing in this episode, how to discover your investment style. But we're going to take a bit of a circuitous route and start by talking about poetry. In 1798, one of my favorite poets, William Wordsworth, and his friend and neighbor, another of my favorite poets, Samuel T. Coleridge, published an experimental volume of poetry called Lyrical Ballads. Their aim was to depart from the elevated and learned tone of a lot of the traditional 18th century poetry and use the conversational language of the middle and lower classes. Now, they sort of divided up the workload. Coleridge was going to focus on, his poems were going to be on persons, what he called persons and characters, supernatural, or at least romantic. So much more romantic, much more supernatural, whereas Wordsworth was to focus on the ordinary things of life. Coleridge described as the charm of novelty to things of every day, but do it in a way that it would excite the feeling of a supernatural, but just to bring to our minds things that people hadn't really thought about, given they're just sort of busy in their day-to-day lives. So they started at the same time. It turns out Wordsworth was way more prolific than Coleridge. And so by the time the volume was complete, Coleridge had only finished about 5 poems. And that's all that was in the Lyrical Ballads. And the rest were Wordsworth. So the reception to this experimental volume of poetry was diametrical, complete opposites. Coleridge describes as there was an eddy of criticism that violently whirled the poems round and around, boosting their notoriety. A lot of the traditional poets and those that liked traditional poetry didn't like this because it was written in the common language. They would even describe the poems as silly. But at the same time, there was this religious fervor that Coleridge describes that characterized the intensity of Wordsworth admirers, particularly not, even though this was using the common language of the people, it was the highly educated young men that just ate up this volume of poetry. So later in 1817, in Coleridge's book, Biographia Literaria, which I've not read, but I read a section, there's one of my favorite quotes by Coleridge. But in this volume, he was sort of talking about all this fur about this volume of poetry and the criticism. But then Coleridge asked, he started to explore, what is it that makes a poem a poem? Is it simply the presence of meter and rhyme? If we added meter to a novel, would it then be a poem? And then here is Coleridge's answer, which is profound, and it applies not just to poetry, but to a myriad of topics, including personal finance. He says, and this is the answer to his question of whether if you just add meter to a novel, whether it would be a poem, quote, the answer is that nothing can permanently please which does not contain in itself the reason why it is so and not otherwise. Let me repeat that. The answer is that nothing can permanently please which does not contain in itself the reason why it is so and not otherwise. In other words, a unique and satisfying whole is comprised of and defined by its parts. A poem, for example, has numerous elements inherent in a structure that makes it a poem and not a novel. What are some of those elements? Well, in a poem, every line is equally important. You don't read a poem and just to scan it to get the general idea or skip the flowery parts of novel to get where the plot's going. No, with a poem, you really have to focus on every line. Here's a quote from Coleridge. The reader should be carried forward not merely or chiefly by the mechanical impulse of curiosity or by a restless desire to arrive at the final solution, but by the pleasurable activity of mind excited by the attractions of the journey itself. It's in the journey. Each line, he says, should excite more continuous and equal attention than a line of prose. The other thing that distinguishes a poem from, let's say, a novel is how it balances or reconciles opposites or discordant qualities. Quote from Coleridge, the general with the concrete, the idea with the image, the individual with the representative, the sense of novelty and freshness with old and familiar objects, a more than usual state of emotion with more than usual order. Coleridge concludes, motion is the life of poetry and imagination of its soul. So a poem is very different from a novel, and how if you read a poem by Wordsworth, it is very different than a poem by Coleridge. I'm often fascinated, you know, as I look at artists' paintings, illustrators, how their style emerges, and it is definitely unique to each person. And so when we talk about investing and how to learn to invest and discover your investment style, we need to recognize and go back to sort of that quote by Coleridge. Things are the way they are. I mean, they're distinguished. The parts of things are unique, and that is what makes them whole. All things, not just physical things, are utterly unique. So we as people are, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, we're completely unique. And so how we approach investing is really a function of our personality. Now, I've known many professional investors over the years, and I have found them, they are definitely as unique in how they approach the markets as one poem or novelist is from another. Some of these investors, and I spent well over a decade researching money managers from hedge funds to bond managers to traditional stock managers to private capital and equity, and some preferred paper assets like stock and bonds, and others really preferred physical things like real estate, getting their hands dirty, exploring properties, deciding what they wanted to buy, or even walking through. You look at a timber manager as they walk and give timber tours, and just the thrill they get by being out in the woods. Some preferred companies that were well-established. Others preferred startups. Some held their securities for only a few weeks. Others kept their position for years. Some liked very concentrated. I've known hedge funds that had six holdings. And there's others that own thousands. There are so many different ways to invest, and we kind of have to find our investment style. And then there's those that don't like investing at all. That's probably not you if you're listening to this show, but some just like to outsource their investments to a financial advisor, or one of the new online investment advisors, or sometimes called robo-advisors, like Betterment or Wealthfront Personal Capital. Now, those are all valid ways to invest. So how do we discover what is best for us? Well, what I want to do is sort of share kind of my journey. How did I discover my particular investment style? And it starts when I was very young, 10 or 11. And it sort of is involved both in how I invest, but also how I conducted business over my life. When I was 10, I decided I wanted a paper route. And the paper route company, I had a very interesting business model. I would deliver the papers once a week. I'd walk a mile to my designated couple of streets. I'd deliver the paper. And then once a month, they wanted me to go collect money from them, from those. Now, these are individuals that didn't ask for the paper. So you could get the paper for free, or you could pay your carrier for just out of the mercy of your own heart, because I was essentially, it was a begging model. Please pay me for having delivered the newspaper that you probably didn't want, but hey, this is the model. Later, I got a paper route that delivered to businesses where the paper route company actually paid me to deliver businesses, which I thought, hey, now that is the way to do it. I passed it on to my sisters. When my oldest son was six, he wanted a same type of paper route. And we called up the paper route company. Our six-year-old would like to deliver newspapers. Can we arrange for that? And they said, sure, as long as you go with them. And so the begging model worked when you're six because everybody thought he was so cute. And even though, you know, we delivered the paper and they would give him money. But around this time, I got in debt up to my eyeballs. I joined a record company, vinyl albums, or LPs. You could get 10 albums for, I believe it was a quarter. Might have been a nickel. I saw the ad in the Cincinnati Enquirer. I sent in my nickel. I got my series of LPs. These were some of the first albums I had ever bought. And the Beach Boys, Helen Reddy, Evening with John Denver, Eagles' Greatest Hits, Bay City Rollers. And I love these records. Well, the record company also had an interesting business model. They would send me a slip or a brochure once a month, and I had to send this slip back to them. Otherwise, they were going to send me their selection of the month. Now, I'm 10 or 11, and so organizational skills was not necessarily my forte. I could manage to get papers delivered once a week, but I just couldn't seem to get that piece of paper sent back. And so albums started showing up. And then, you know, eventually I was over $100, I believe, in debt owed to a record company where my earnings from my begging paper route was about $20. And I particularly remember getting Kiss Rock and Roll and their Destroyer album, double album collection. I hated Kiss, and because I then owed the record company even more money. About this time, I saw what's known as an advertorial in a full-page ad in the Cincinnati Enquirer, written like a story, and I don't remember who the entity was, but it was a man that owned a mobile home and implied that he had location independence and did it. And he could show me, high in debt, $100 in debt, how to do that. I convinced my mom to buy this man's material. And this big box showed up. It was a box of books on copywriting and marketing. And I delved into that. And at the same time, I just OD'd on all these sales books. My mom was selling real estate at the time. And so I had all these classic books, The Greatest Salesman in the World, Think and Grow Rich, The Richest Man in Babylon, How to Win Friends and Influence People. I was listening to tapes, and at 11 or 12, I was just entrenched in all this motivational get rich. I was reading myself mantras in the mirror. I had my goals, and I went through this entrepreneurial phase, and I started learning to copyright. And I was going to run my Super Bowl ad. I ran an ad in the same paper that I delivered. And it was a fairly large ad. I took all my money that I had, and it was for the Graphoanalysis Association of America. Because one of the things I learned from my copywriting books, at least this time, is you had to look big. And so I was the GAA, and I was going to do graphoanalysis. My training in this was I had a book from the library. We got a P.O. box, I ran the ad, and I remember the day I had my mom drive me to the post office because I couldn't drive, and it was 5 miles away. And I got that key, I opened up the P.O. box, and it was empty. And I went back, I thought, well, maybe it was too early. I went back several days later, and it was empty. I did not get one sale. But I wasn't discouraged, a little bit. But I thought the problem was not my copywriting, it was the model, and it was the vehicle that I used to advertise. And so I went national. I saved up more money. It was probably 6 months later. I launched a new company, National Information Compilation Service, and I was running an ad through in a thing called Grit, was a newspaper. This time I had a lead magnet, so I was selling a little brochure. I think it was something on personal finance, perhaps staying out of debt. And so at 11, I'm running an ad for people to get this brochure, which I believe came from the government, how to get out of debt. And again, I read the ad. And the idea with this model was people would pay me a buck for this thing, and then I would send them a dollar and then pitch my research services, which as a 12-year-old probably were not that very good. Ran the ad, excited as can be, national exposure, hundreds, I don't know how many, tens of thousands read this, open my P.O. box, nothing there. And I didn't make a cent. So then I turned to physical labor. And this is my point when it comes to investing. One of the biggest things we have to decide in investing is, do you like physical assets or paper assets? I find in my early business entrepreneur that I like kind of this virtual thing. It probably isn't a surprise that when I got to college and got into a career that I liked paper assets. I liked sort of this, not even this online marketing. I just liked the paper versus a physical. When I had physical jobs, I launched companies where I launched a janitorial company when I was 14. Daybreak cleaning, and I was going to wash walls, and I was going to wash windows. And one of the most embarrassing moments in my young entrepreneurial career was finding out that I actually couldn't work a squeegee and got hired to wash this lady's windows and could not get the streaks out. She had mercy on me and gave me some paper towels and some Windex, and I cleaned her windows and at that point focused more on wall cleaning and grasses. But I found that in investing, I gravitated toward paper, toward in my business, toward not hard labor, but paper things, virtual things. And that's the first thing you have to decide in discovering how to invest. Do you want to get your hands dirty? I know farmers in Idaho that wouldn't buy a stock for anything because they were way more comfortable owning land. And when they make money and they have a good year, they go build a bigger house because they like that physical thing. They're not comfortable with paper assets. Let me pause here to share some words from this week's sponsors. We have a brand new sponsor to our show. It's Yahoo Finance. Yahoo's been around for decades. My first email outside of work was a Yahoo email address. But the financial side, I've used on occasion primarily to get data for dividend histories for particular funds or ETFs. But I was pleasantly surprised to get back on Yahoo Finance to see how it's evolved over the years. Now it's really a financial dashboard where you can get an understanding of what's going on with the markets. There are relevant articles from Bloomberg, Reuters, the Associated Press, and the Yahoo Finance team. You can look at the economic events calendar and see which data series are being released that day and what the consensus is. You can see the pulse of the markets at any time by going to Yahoo Finance. In addition, you could see all of your investments and retirement accounts in one place with Yahoo Finance. You get a consolidated view of multiple accounts. Yahoo Finance serves as a financial hub for your retirement accounts, but also comprehensive financial news and analysis. You need to check out Yahoo Finance, particularly if you haven't been there in a while. Check it out at yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com. If you've been using Mint to manage your finances, you know they shut down several months ago. Well, let me tell you about the budgeting solution, the financial tracking solution I've been using for the past number of months. It's Monarch Money. Monarch Money is the top-rated all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. You can create custom budgets like I've done. You can set goals, collaborate with your partner. And now you can get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/David. What I like about Monarch is the ability to customize what I want to see. I have custom budget categories, and then I can go on to the dashboard and see where I'm above trend on some of my spending. I especially like that Monarch will never sell your data to third parties or show you ads. After trying Monarch myself, I understand why it's the top-rated personal finance app. And right now, get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/David. That's monarchmoney.com/David for your extended 30-day free trial. The other thing we have to consider then, as I got older and got hired on and was an investment advisor, I met with many, many investment managers, as I've said, and I saw how they invested. And I was also consulting to institutional clients and began to do asset allocation. And I realized that the other thing one has to decide in learning how to invest and discovering their investment style is, do you like investing specifically in securities? Do you like to get your hands dirty in dealing with financial statements and researching individual companies and the very, very micro detail, what's happening to this industry, what's happening to this sector, what's happening to this particular stock or this particular bond? There are investors that really like that. I found that I actually preferred focusing on assets because it was easier. I've met with so many hedge funds and realized how much time it takes to run a hedge fund, 60, 70, 80 hours a week, because the markets are always on and you're always trying to get that informational edge. But if I could essentially replicate much of that same performance by focusing on asset classes where I could only have, I only needed to make three or four changes per year, if that, versus having to do all this ongoing motion and activity. And so I gravitated toward asset classes and not securities. That's the other consideration. And then you need to consider active versus passive. There are investors, their investment style, which is very much, as I mentioned earlier, aligned with their personality, that just want to do it, put it aside, and ignore it, and rebalance once a year. There are others like me that like to be a little more active, adjust the asset allocation based on market conditions, based on things, valuations, based on market internals, and what's going on. That's another consideration. So how do you discover which particular investment style, whether you want to be more active or passive? What do you want to focus on, asset classes versus securities? Whether you want to focus on hard assets versus paper assets? These are critical questions. And the way to learn and to find that out is to actually start. You can open a brokerage account with $50. And I opened one recently, and I'll tell you why, for $200. And with that, I bought a stock, I bought an ETF, and I bought a closed-end fund. And this was a completely separate brokerage account because I was doing a screencast. Because the idea is you learn by doing and trying. And you buy a stock, even if you're not, and if you've never invested before, you just buy one and you see how you react to that, to the stock going up, to the stock going down. And you buy an ETF and you decide how you react to that. And you, little by little. So the question is, how do you start investing? You start by starting and beginning, but you do it with a small amount of capital, just so over time you start to learn your investment style. You find investment mentors, virtual mentors, people that you admire, Warren Buffett or Seth Klarman or Ned Davis or Howard Marks. These are all some of my investment mentors that I have admired, mostly from afar. Some I've met in person, some I admire from afar, but I've watched and learned how they invest. So you start by starting. And the idea is, as you get older and as you get more capital, you discover your investment style that is aligned with your personality. You realize you prefer physical assets over paper assets. Or you realize that you prefer to focus on individual securities, individual holdings, versus an overall asset class focus. Or you prefer to be more passive versus active. Now, granted, all investment portfolios probably have a little bit of all of those elements. But again, it's where do you spend your time. On the Money for the Rest of Us Hub, I just finished up a course called Learn to Invest in 7 Steps, which is how, really, for the beginning investor to explore to help them discover their investment style. Now, some of you might not want to be part of a monthly membership site, don't want the other things that's involved in the hub. So I'm making that course, Learn to Invest in 7 Steps, available as a separate offering. If you go to moneyfortherestofus.net there at the bottom of the homepage, you can watch this first lesson and introduction to get more information on this course, Learn to Invest in 7 Steps. It's a series of 20 video lessons over 3 hours of content, and I show from the very beginning how to select and open a brokerage account with $200 or less. What is a stock? What is an exchange-traded fund? What is an exchange-traded note? What's a closed-end fund? How do they differ? And then I show you how to buy each one, how to do a limit trade. I show how to build out a network of virtual investment mentors and give examples of some of my mentors and what I've learned from them. Talk about asset classes, asset class valuation, asset class timing, and just the whole idea of experimenting and how to discover your investment style. So 20 video lessons. If you go to moneyfortherestofus.net, you can get more information on that. That's really all I have today. Discover your investment style little by little. If you have any questions, you can email me, jd@jdavidstein.com. Thanks to all of you that left reviews of the show. I very much appreciate that. I enjoy getting that insight. If you would like show notes or show notes for this episode, can be found also at moneyfortherestofus.net. Or if you go there and explore that course, Learn to Invest in 7 Steps, you might sign up for my insider's guide, where I'll email you free on a weekly basis those show notes. So I'm also answering listener questions and providing other valuable content. Everything I've shared with you in episode today is for general education only. I've not considered your risk profile. I've not provided investment advice. I'm simply providing general education on money, investing in the economy. Have a great week.